Hello, everyone. My name is Jacob Minnick. I am the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Emmanuel Anthony. Emmanuel is a researcher, writer, teacher, and inspirational speaker. He is a DeMartini facilitator and consultant who, again, works one-on-one and one-on-many to assist human beings globally to overcome mental disorders, common challenges, achieve their goals, and expand their human awareness, maximize human potential, gain clarity on their mission, and lead highly inspiring lives with all areas of life. He has served thousands of clients over the past 11 years, and his teachings have been shared online, on the radio, television, and through workshops and speaking engagements. Emmanuel, thank you so much for being on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I do a couple of these a week, and it's always fun to speak to people all around the world.
Well, yeah, and where are you out of again right now?
Australia, so Australia. Sydney, Australia.
Wow, that's beautiful. I've always wanted to go.
Definitely recommend it. Where are you at?
Minnesota, so United States.
Nice. I haven't been. Last time I went there was about probably 8 years ago. Did New York, LA, Miami, and Vegas. Yeah, loved it. Vegas is my favorite place on earth.
Me too.
you just disappear. Do you know what? I used 17 or 26. I did doors at nightclubs. So when I got to Vegas, I did not go to one nightclub at all. And everyone was like, how did you have the best time in Vegas and you didn't go to one club? I go, there's everything is available there. Doesn't matter what you are. Like, I went off this trip and I still thought that was just a whole other adventure in itself as well.
Oh God, you could spend so much time just being on the strip, just people watching for hours, man. It's phenomenal.
100%. So yeah, I loved it. I loved it. It reminds me of aspects of Thailand. Don't know if you've been there, but
I haven't.
Thailand and Vegas, it sounds weird, but the one thing I love is that the fact that there's so many conversations being had, I'm as a human behavioral specialist, about just shit that happens in the world. You know, like in your regular suburb, everybody hides everything that's going on. It's all taboo. Over there, it's just, do you want a hooker? Draw some coke. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about this. It's a place where people can just communicate about all the things that they wouldn't normally communicate about. And whether you agree or disagree, it's all there to be discussed. And there's something beautiful about not suppressing all of that for me.
Well, and isn't it like a sense of safety too? When you're expressing things like this, you don't have to worry about certain like consequences, let's say.
Yeah, 100%. I just feel like a lot of those coats that we put on to look proper and everything just come off and you just meet people and have a laugh. So it feels like a really good holiday. We met some amazing people there, smoked some cigars in the casinos and just had conversations and, met people from all around America. And it was good.
Oh yeah, especially like on the blackjack table, you always meet some interesting people, I'll tell you. That's where you have the best conversations. So I'm just curious, what got you into the field in the first place? We'll call it the human behavior specialist realm.
Well, for me, originally it was resolving my own challenges and problems. So I feel like most people, whatever field you get into, you originally get into it for yourself. People are personal trainers, for example, usually want to work on their own body. And then they figure out, hey, if I keep working in here, then I can work on me while I help other people at the same time. So my original challenges that I had growing up was just trying to figure out how to manage my emotions and my perceptions. And I always felt like my friends, they could kind of get beyond all of that way before I did. So it was almost like I was a little behind them and I really didn't like that. So, I started looking at ways because I just felt intuitively I could learn. I could figure out a way to learn how to manage my emotions. And this idea that time will heal your wounds was just, it was taking too much time. Yeah. So either other people were smarter than me or I hadn't figured it out yet. So I went on this intensive look and, $350,000 later, studying courses and meeting some of the world's top human behavioral specialists. I just collected from all of the different studies just what was working. And because I had clients coming in, I'd work for 100 or so clients every year. Every time I worked with clients, I would then apply what the methodologies I had learned and new qualifications I had. And you really got to have a comparative study of what worked and what didn't work. in that. So I just continued to formulate for my company, Quantum Equilibrium, the best tools we could find until we're at where we are today, where we can guarantee to create results with our clients. So if somebody comes in, they've got a trauma, we can say, okay, we'll get to the, as long as we get to the root cause of what that trauma is about, I guarantee we'll let go of that trauma by the end of the time working together.
Okay. Now, again, going back to when you said you noticed your friends were just farther along, was it just like a sense of, again, maturity? Like you mentioned, like, okay, they just handled their emotions. Did that mean like they handled their anger, like emotions better, more efficiently than you?
I didn't even think it really mattered in that sense what emotions it was. I felt like breakups was a big one. And I don't know, maybe they were dealing with it differently on their end. You know what I mean? Okay. Like when you're hanging out with the boys, it's a whole different persona.
Yep.
Yeah, but I had a mixture of some really great friends that some of them were older than me. So I had I never had an older brother blood-wise. I always felt like I wanted one because I'm the older brother in my family. I've got a sister and a brother. But somehow the universe, from the minute I was born, gave me a cousin who lived next door, and he played the role of the older brother. And he was, I think, 3 or 4 years older than me. And then when he left high school, I think it was around the same year, I happened to move location down the road, and I met another gentleman by the name of Peter. And he was about the same age, just a couple of years older, and he replaced that role. So I had these amazing people that played these roles, and they guided me through it. So the one great thing was hanging out with Peter. You know, I remember at 17, I'd have a breakup or something, and we go to his house, and he's Chilean, so we'd have tequila and just light some candles outside, cry and talk about it. And that was all good. You know, we didn't have to worry about him going, you know, at that time, obviously we're a lot more politically correct now, but didn't have to worry at that time about him going, oh, that's gay, or anything like that. He just say, you know, let it out, brother. It's all good. I've been there. You know, anybody that says that they don't cry at the end of a breakup or something like that. So they opened up the doorway to embracing and looking at my emotions when in the household of my father, he was very manly. It was like, no, you don't do that, dude. You just suck it up. And that wasn't working for me. And so I continued to have those conversations and study and looked at towards those guys and, you know, really looked towards their wisdom, and they guided me. But then at a certain point, I'd kind of reached the ceiling of their wisdom, and I needed to transcend beyond that because it looked like, number one, I was taking up too much of their time. They had their own thing. But secondly, I could see that this was moving in a direction where I wanted the most powerful tools in the world. And that involved working with people that specialize in those fields. And that's what they do 24 hours a day. And they've been doing that for decades.
You know, when you say things like that, I get the sense of like someone being vulnerable. And again, there's no shame attached to that vulnerability. It's finding true acceptance and love in the moment when you're expressing to like a mentor, let's say.
And I think where I am today, what I've discovered is that it's not, I don't even care about the vulnerability anymore because every human being expresses that, it doesn't. It's having the tools to be able to decide when that vulnerability ends. That was a real challenge for me. I wanted to be able to say that within a couple of minutes or hours, I could end this thing permanently and forever instead of waiting weeks, months, or years. And that's what I discovered. The DeMartini methods are the major tool that I use today. And it doesn't matter any emotion that I experience, anger, fear, sadness, hurt, guilt, resentment, even grief, I can have it resolved anywhere within a couple of hours to half a day maximum. That's it, permanently and forever. And for me, that was huge from where I came from.
All right, I got a cool question to ask you. Do you ever have a client where you get the idea that they kind of like venting and kind of being sad and processing? And 100%. Then you catch yourself be like, okay, that's great, I'm here for you, but now I want to teach you the tools to overcome that.
Yeah, 100%. Because you can be a victim of your history or a master of your destiny. I just created a video last week that says you could be the victor or you could be the victim, but you can't be both. Because as long as you're playing the violin, then you've got to play that role. But in order to transcend beyond that, and it's never what happens to you, it's your perceptions of what happens to you that dictates and determines your life. Because whatever you think has occurred within your life that you're playing a victim for, you could meet 10 or 20 people that have used that as fuel for their fire, and they're doing something absolutely inspiring and amazing with that. And whatever role you choose to play, it's going to take up some time in your life. So 100%. I had a discovery call only 2 days ago, And I believe the guy on the call spent more time giving me his labels that he'd been labeled with, and then what from you know, psychiatrists, and then also giving me the labels of what he had Googled, and then defending it on the phone. And I just said, I don't think we're going to work well together. You have more of a desire to defend your labels. I break through labels. So we're working on opposite spectrums here.
Because I wonder in his mindset, what would actually happen if I didn't do that? If I actually did break through,
it's not even psyche,
what would happen?
Yeah, it's not even comprehensible in his reality. What I offer in terms of a service, once again, I've been doing this for 11 years. My mentor has been doing this for 40 years. When I speak to people, the greatest, like I put it in a really simple term, I say, if you go to a pizza shop, I'm a pizza lover. I have a good pizza at least once a fortnight. And if I go to a pizza shop and I ordered a pizza and rocked up and handed them the money, and after I handed them the money, they just said, okay, thanks, mate. Have a good day. I'd go, yeah, where's the pizza? Because they don't have the ability to just, you know, say thanks a lot and take the money. But within the psychological field, meaning the field of the mind, there's many fields where it's just talking therapy. You rock up, lie down on that comfortable couch, ask you how you feel. And then at the end of the hour, you get billed and go home and nothing's really being produced. You've just been talking about that past wound. So I don't understand that. So one of the things that I created 11 years ago when I started doing this work, I said, we guarantee our results or we will give you your money back. We're here for your results, not to talk to you about it. Because if you want to talk to somebody, go talk to your friends. They may feel sorry for you and buy you lunch or something like that. You get something out of it. But if you're coming to a professional in my mind has the ability to do things at the highest and fastest rate. Stephen Curry, dropping three-pointers better than anybody else. Why is he a professional? Why is he seen as the best shooter of all time? Because he's got the highest percentage in that area. He gets the job done. That's what a professional does. So for me, if a person's spending more time justifying, trying to live within that reality, that we're not going to be able to help them create results because there's a very specific environment that we need to do that.
You know, and I really loved what you said just now about key results when you're as a professional working with a client. Because me as a therapist, again, a lot of therapists are going to disagree with me on this. My biggest pet peeve is when I hear clients or even therapists talking about, oh, you know, I worked with my therapist for like 5, 10 years, you know, we have a good relationship. And I just like two things. It's just like, why are you still with them? And two, why is that therapist still, why is that therapist ethically still working with you and not referring you to someone that can help them? And that's no knock at that therapist. I think that's almost abuse in a sense.
I'm so glad to finally be on a podcast where somebody understands this concept. And by the way, when I said that to this guy, because don't forget, like his model of reality is based on everything that he has seen and done. So 80% of my clients, I've been through 10 psychiatrists, 5 psychologists, 2 counselors. So they compare all of that. And then I give them this alternative option. And it doesn't even seem real because the only thing they can grasp onto is what they previously experienced. And they're trying to find in that previous experience what feels like what he's communicating, but it's not even in the same realm within that. So I understand that challenge because we're about to hire staff to take on our discovery calls and we're going to be training them. But I've been doing it for 11 years and I understand the challenges that they have in communicating that across. And how in their model of the world, I've just told them we can walk upside down Mars right now, just take my hand. That's what it sounds like. But I agree with you. The standards in the psychological field are so below par compared to so many other industries. Yeah. I can't even, it's even worse than that, what is happening to most of these people. I finished working with a lady yesterday. She's around 60 and, when she finished, she said to me, the amount of areas that we've cleared, because we worked on her self-worth, past relationship, grief, did like, 15 weeks worth of work. She was the amount of areas that we've cleared in my life and the tools that I now have, because I had them for 50 years. She goes, I got rid of them in weeks. She goes, I can't believe this. And prior to that, she was thinking, oh, I'm going to go back to my therapist. And her son who had worked with me said, he created so much change. She said, no, I'm going to try eating from the same bowl as him because he seems to have done something different. And she just said, she goes, this is crazy. She goes, nobody knows about this. And I go, when this becomes a standard in society for psychological therapy, I will feel like I've left somewhat of an imprint, but until then, it needs to continue. So I 100% agree with you.
I want to add one more thing. I had this grad school teacher that I didn't always see eye to eye with, but I did respect him on like one thing. And he reminded me of you just now, where you have some love, obviously you have love and empathy for your client and everything, and you'll hear them out for a little bit. But I remember one time he said, he's like, okay, yep, to the client, I understand that. I get the gist of what's going on with the pattern. Now I want to give you the tools to help overcome that. I'll listen to you, but again, I want to give you the tools for you to be successful in handling these negative emotions.
I'll agree with that 100%. Well, two things. I love my clients, but I don't actually have empathy for them. And the reason being, 11 years ago, I started with a method called NLP, then transitioned out of that. Yep. And then I learned timeline therapy. And as I was doing timeline therapy, which was the most powerful thing I had at the time, it was pretty cool. I mean, you dissolve negative emotions within minutes. It was amazing. But the way that I was taught to do that was, let's say somebody was working on the topic of a father or something like that. You would have this whole process for about, it go generally for an hour. You'd ask a set of questions. I'd have them all printed out and I'd ask these questions. And then I would write exactly what the client was saying furiously in exactly the words that we're utilizing, because I needed to understand their model of reality. I was going to go back through that after the session. And if we had broken the pattern and made the changes, then they wouldn't even be able to connect with what was just said. Now, I started doing that. First client, I did it. By the end of the session, we'd done the work. I read it to them. They were almost confused, like a different person had said it. And I went, okay. Then 25 people, 50 people, 100 people. I started to not even care about the first part of it. I started to have more interest in the last part of it because they weren't even committed to it. It was going to change so much that it would mean nothing to them. So at that point, I started to realize, oh, there's nothing to feel empathetic about, because once they resolve that, they don't even feel for that. They actually transition beyond it. And at that point, I realized, oh, okay, there's nothing to feel for because they're not even going to feel for that. They're going to use it as fuel for their fire in the future. But the emotions associated with it, that's gone by the time we're done. So that was a really powerful thing. And I also think it was important because a joke I have with my clients is when they first start, I said, if they come in for depression or anxiety, et cetera, I go, this is beautiful, thanks for your labels. But if I speak to 10 people, they all tell me they're depressed. I find the root cause of each one of their depressions could be different. One, a person's father passed away. Another one was started feeling depression after a marriage failed. Another one has low self-worth and they've been beating themselves up and just lost a job. So the word depression doesn't mean anything. The root cause and the perceptions that are creating that symptomology with inside of them is what's important. So as we work on that and then overcome those things, all of a sudden the label spontaneously disappears within that. They go, it doesn't disappear. These are feedback mechanisms. And when you understand what the feedback is producing, you can work on the root cause. And in doing so, you can bring back balance and clear brain noise and restore human physiology to its natural form, which it wants to do anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Curious, is timeline therapy somewhat similar to like narrative therapy?
I don't know what narrative therapy is. What's involved with that?
It's kind of similar. You kind of work with a timeline and you go through like certain traumatic events, let's say through the age of like 5 to like present day, and you go over like each traumatic event, and then you try to make meaning and sense out of it.
So you similar, I would say, in a way.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say similar, because like I haven't done this for years. It's good, but it's not as powerful as the DeMartini method. That's why I stopped utilizing it. When you use something with 100 clients, you start to like feel what are the holes within this therapy of things that I'm unable to resolve. And for me, if I can't resolve something, that becomes a problem. Because people come to me to resolve their challenges. And if that's my ceiling, and then everything outside of that can't be resolved, and I've got people coming to me for that, then they've asked for something that's beyond my knowledge. And it's my job to search for that knowledge, which isn't easy because you usually have to do comparative studies and spend quite a bit of money learning a few different things. And majority of those won't friggin' work and they'll be rubbish. Mm-hmm. But then eventually you can transcend to the stuff that does within that. But in timeline therapy, they would say, let's say, because you'd resolve anger, fear, sadness, hurt. But that's okay. When was the first time? It's a lot of unconscious work, which is the other thing that I liked, but I didn't like about it. The problem with doing unconscious work is that I find the client becomes reliant on you in order to do the work. When you teach them to do things consciously, they become reliant on themselves in that. And you want a mergence of both, because there are things at times you'll have to teach them to access unconsciously, or you may need somebody. It's a really deep trauma. Sometimes you may need a consultant to help you find it. But if I can at least get them to handle 85% of it themselves, or 90%, I'd like to. But basically, there's a script. And as you're reading the script, it says, you know, when was the first time that you experienced anger towards your father? Was it before, during, or after birth? And they just, the unconscious mind just says what it says. So they may say after birth, what specific point after birth? At 5 years old, excellent. I want you to float up and above your timeline. And they get people to float up and above their timeline and disassociate with what's going on. And then I want you to go to that specific moment, drop down into that moment. And then once they drop down, they're now associating and feeling all of the feelings associated with it to make sure that that's the first moment. And they'll go, yep, excellent. Go back up and above your timeline. So once again, disassociated, looking down at that event, what are the positive learnings that would allow you to let go of that? And I get it. You know, they're using quantum entanglement in order to utilize change, and it works. That's what the DeMartini method does. The problem and the limitation with timeline therapy, and I spoke to the creator, Tad James, and Adriana James at a dinner we had with a whole bunch of us, they didn't understand this concept. And that's when I transcended it and said, I'm out of here, because you guys aren't understanding what's actually creating the change in here. Yeah. You work on the perceived negatives by seeing an equal and opposite positive. Once you get that to a one-to-one balance, it will balance that out. The person will never feel that emotion in there again. But as I worked with clients that would then feed in the delusion as they leave the session, I was feeling negative. Emmanuel kept asking me about the positives. Therefore, if I continue to look for positives and just be a positive person, then I'm going to end up having the results I want. I said, no, they're two sides of the same delusion. Mm-hmm. Because if you exaggerate things and put them on a pedestal, eventually that unrealistic expectation and delusion will be popped, and you end up bipolaring, monopolar addictions to one pole than the other. And you'll beat yourself up and then lift yourself up and then beat yourself up. And you're always trying to ignore the other side instead of embracing both. But no matter what I did, as long as I did that in the session, I was asking them to do something that I wasn't doing, and they wouldn't do as I said, they do as I did. So I needed something where I could actually take the infatuations and the delusions of infatuations they have and show them the drawbacks until they could see the balance and then live in that balance point as much as possible.
Now, going back to, again, the certain timeline events and when you talk about dissociation, right? So when you're floating above the traumatic event and going into it, do you ever do a lot of like mindful meditation with your clients prior to that? So they're used to those uncomfortable feelings?
Well, not anymore, because with the DeMartini method, one of the greatest things about that is instead of getting people to float up and above their timeline and do all of that, I honestly use it like once every couple of years. It's if I work with a child that's maybe 5 or 6, that's faced a very traumatic thing, and before I can get them to consciously take that on, I want them to do it unconsciously to take a little bit of the heat off it. That's when I'll do that. But now utilizing the DeMartini method, one of the things that's great about it is the specific columns, and each column has a purpose in terms of the breakthrough. And the first column for side A and B, when working on yourself or someone other than yourself, but you can also work on grief on that, says, let's say I'm working on my father. That's the first person I broke through. The side B, which is your perceived negative, side A is your perceived positives, but you're balancing both perceptions, will say, what specific human trait, action or inaction, do you most dislike, despise, or consider negative about this person? So you have a something that somebody did, which is a trait, action, or inaction. We have a human perception of what they did, and then we have an emotion. So the emotion's a third part in the spectrum, and we're hitting the root cause. So let's say, for example, I say he verbally yelled at me. Then from there, in column 10, because there's 7 columns in there, column 10 will actually get you to go to that moment consciously and say, look at the 7 areas of life: physical, financial, mental, spiritual, social, vocation, and family. What were the benefits and the services to you when your father did that? And you now have to look and find the benefits equal to the drawbacks, because the people that have transcended that have used it as fuel for their power. Now, we're not trying to make it overly positive, so it's all positive. We're actually just seeing both sides, which is true. Both sides are the way that it is. And in that method, there's a beautiful column 14 as well. So I've just gone from 7 to 10 to 14, and 14 dissolves the fantasy, because all depression comes from fantasies and comparisons of the way that we perceive things should be. And that column says, hey, go back to that moment. And if things had been the way that you had wished and fantasized over, what's the drawback to you? So in my case, I remember when I actually worked on that, it was, oh, if my dad hugged me and spoke to me and all of those things. And I realized I was being beaten on the outside. I was always bullied in primary school. Then my dad was challenging me on the inside. And because of that, I went and learned everything that I did and empowered myself. But if he was at home holding me and spoon feeding me, I never would have left the household. Just would have been a little nerd hanging out at home, doing my own thing. And I never would have felt the desire to go out and actually empower myself. So you actually end up in this paradox where you realize if you had gotten what you wanted as benefits and drawbacks, but it's equal to the benefits and the drawbacks you got in what occurred. And then you actually appreciate where you are and say, thank you. And I love that, and transition beyond it. Now, where does the meditation aspect that you spoke about come into that? After that, because brain noise comes from imbalanced perceptions, and the more imbalanced perceptions we have, so you can call that emotional baggage, the harder it is for the brain to be silent. So whenever people use meditation as an escapism, I said, you're not getting it. There's nothing wrong with you. Your mind is bringing up all of the areas that are creating disease and disorder through the autonomic and central nervous system based on imbalances in your perceptions. And imbalanced perceptions create imbalanced emotions, which are chemical and hormone distributions, and they go through organs and actually every part of your body, including neurology and cells. So you're creating damage, and it has two points that brings it up: the mind, big screen projector, and the body, like a thermostat, too hot or too cold. So why is it a balance those things? Clear the mind, and then after you clear the mind, then from there, go and meditate, and the greatest inspirations will come. But if people just use it as an escapism to try and quieten it by getting rid of those thoughts, it's a waste of time for me.
So I want you to do me a huge favor. I want to throw one example at you, and I want you to give me your best, as just like you did now, but like again, a different type of trauma. What would you say if you worked with someone who had a very bad traumatic experience, but it was more of like an embarrassment type experience? You know, the classic, like,
yeah, done that.
The whole class is pointing, laughing at you for something you did, and they're making fun of you. Again, do you ever look at it in a sense of, okay, positive, negatives, what was their role in it? What was your role in the interaction, and so
yes.
forth? Okay.
100%. Because you got to take the ownership of your perceptions in that moment, but you also want to love the fact that we're evolutionary beings, and each one of these situations creates an opportunity for growth, and we realize where our maximum awareness was. Michael Jordan became Michael Jordan not because he was given everything he wanted, but if anybody that knows the real story of Michael Jordan, it's because he was cut from the varsity team. That pissed him off. And that one moment created a drive inside of him, which he had before that, but not at that level, to prove, dude, I'm the man. And you don't believe it, but you will by next year. And I'm going to show you everything that I can. So these moments that occur, we're not only balancing them, but by the end of balancing it, the clients are able to see the role that they played, the role that other people played, but also how that moment was actually crucial in an aspect of their growth in that, because they were being supported, but that represented the challenge. And quite often your biggest void creates your biggest value. So what you just said there, I worked with a lady, she works at one of the major banks in Australia. And she was being asked to do presentations in front of her staff. And when she was being asked to do that, she said, I can't. She rang me and she said, I can't do these presentations. I said, why? She says, is it a fear of communicating in front of others or whatever? And she said, yeah, I'm scared that I'm going to get embarrassed and embarrass myself in front of these people. She goes, but it's an unrational or irrational fear, because I know all of them and I speak to them individually and they're good friends. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, you didn't just create this. There's an original perception and a reason that you first created this feeling of embarrassment or that this would occur. So in my first pre-consultation with people, I always go through their whole life, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, I get a full look at what occurred. And we found that during 0 to 10, in front of some girls that she had had on a pedestal that were the popular group, she said something, and one of the most popular girls that she really had on a pedestal, because anyone that you have on a pedestal, you fear the judgment of them and being embarrassed in front of them, said something and the other girls laughed. And it wasn't anything too crazy, but she took that because she was just learning how to come into her social power as a real embarrassment, and then thought, I never want to have that experience occur again. So when her and I worked together, we had to go back to that moment, balance that moment. And then once we balanced it and came forward, a week later, I just get a message from her on my phone, and it says, craziest thing happened. I finished a meeting with my manager, and I realized the best way to communicate what he was saying was to talk to the staff. So I just told everybody, hey, I'm going to organize a meeting at 1 o'clock. Ran the meeting, didn't feel anything. Actually, I had anticipation before it, because I wanted to make sure I communicated everything, but there was no fear or anxiety or anything. And even afterwards, I just rolled on like a normal day. So definitely it was amazing. And what she realized was that moment was a catalyst for her owning her own self and moving away from trying to subordinate to those girls and empowering herself. And that wouldn't have occurred if that moment hadn't occurred. So there was a beauty in that too.
It's very unique. That's awesome, man. It's special. It really is.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you mentioned that you also apply a little NLP.
I used to, not anymore. There's a lot of, in the comparative studies that I've done, I'd say that in NLP is only 10% of it, not even probably 5% that I actually think really works. The rest of it, this is going to be controversial for anybody, but I can only speak my truth. Mm-hmm. I'd say most of it doesn't work. There were things like anchoring where they'd say, think of this thingy, then touch this, and then touch this point. And in the seminar, when you have 100 people, everybody will go, oh, yeah, And then months later, I thought, let me test this out. So I'd meet somebody from the workshop and they'd anchored something into here, apparently. People listening, I'm touching a point on my knuckle. And I'd touch that point when I went and shook their hands or something, nothing would occur. And I said, there's a lot of fluff going on in this. And I'm sure that it can help people create, because it doesn't matter what the hell you do, everything helps somebody create a little bit of change and expand your awareness to a degree, even if it's just, learning what not to do. But it wasn't what I was dedicated to. So if you have to ask me what aspects of NLP do I clearly say are phenomenal and anybody learning it could learn from, the learning about modeling other people and understanding how to communicate with them, learning about things like, if you're on a sales call, when I teach people about sales, if you're speaking to somebody and they're in a certain tone, accessing that part of yourself, speaking in a similar tone, having a look at their tonality, having a look at their physiology, all of those communication things, phenomenal. Their sales process, amazing. Best sales process I've ever seen before. They've got a process they call the 5-step sales process. I've remodeled that to be the 5-step serving process, because the word sales in Greek Latin means to serve. Mm-hmm. Some people feel a bit weird about selling. So I teach them how to actually appreciate the fact that they're offering things for a person's needs, and the higher the need, the more of a service you're actually offering. They're the major things that I think really work, but a lot of the other stuff, 90% of it, I used to teach it. I used to be on stages and all that. And I just, the minute I saw something that was 10 times better than that, I said, am I really addicted to my qualifications and what people call me, or am I more interested in the results of my clients? And I said, that is what I've got to judge myself by as a standard. So I just dropped it.
Well, it's funny too. Research shows that even in the counseling therapy realm, more education doesn't mean you're going to be a better therapist.
No.
It actually means you're going to be a worse therapist.
Wow.
Due to the more education you have. So I found that to be very interesting.
I think the problem with education is that we've mistaken qualifications for results or things like that. And this is just, once again, you and I, you see a similar model to me. It's results. That's it. That's a professional. How you get there is up to you. But there are multiple and different ways, but that we're still judged by the same thing. I had a lady that came to me and she said, what do you do? And I said, well, at the moment, I specialize in the DeMartini method. At the time, I'd been doing that for 6 years. I've worked with 700-800 clients at the time. And she said, okay, what's your qualification? I said, DeMartini method facilitator. I said, I've got a list of other qualifications, but that's the one that I'm specializing in right now. And she goes, okay, I think I'll go back to my psych. And I said, okay, I'm just curious, what have you tried? Oh, this is my 7 psychiatrists, a couple of life coaches. She was smiling like this was an achievement. And I said, okay. I said, have any of them ever guaranteed to produce a result or they'll give you your money back? Because the only thing that was important was a result. She said, no, that's not something people do. She was almost defending them. And I said, I think you're on the wrong side of the fence. I don't mean to be offensive, but I'm defending your ability to get a result or not call me a professional. You're defending the ability for somebody that calls himself a professional to not get a result, and you're the person to blame for it. I said, and she goes, that's a good point. I said, anyway, I'll have a think about this. So I got referred by her partner, and after her partner said, look, I know I referred her because she's got the challenges, but I have to learn how to deal with her because she's got a lot going on. So let me work with you. So her and I started to work together, and within a fortnight of working together, I get a call from her partner, who she originally referred. She goes, okay, I'm in. That was it, first thing on the phone. I said, okay, I'm in. I said, well, what do you mean? What's changed mm-hmm. from our previous conversation? She goes, I feel like I am an expert in going through the system that I've been through. She said, my partner has changed more in 14 days than I have in 8 years. Wow. So I don't know what you've done with her, but there's clearly evidence that you're doing something that works. Mm-hmm. So her and I work together. Amazing client, absolutely amazing client. She had some deep traumas that we worked on. And my process is to not only enjoy the breakthrough, but to laugh through the breakthrough. Not laugh yeah. as in I'm having comedy to actually get away from it and escapism, but actually laughing once you start to see the breakthrough and what that's given you in your life and how mm-hmm. you didn't see that earlier within that. And as her and I did that, we had an amazing 6 weeks together at my level one program, broke through three major traumas. She completely became a different person from that. Came back a couple of years later, did my level two and just referred 10 or 20 people from that. Anybody that came to her and said, you know, I'm going to go back to my life, you've got to go to this guy. She said that there is no risk whatsoever because he will do what he says he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And then you're part of his program for life. You pay for that period, but you're in the system after that. So any questions you have, you just reach out and he'll help you. So just amazing. And it's beautiful to see because you and I go to work on a daily basis to see people change. If mm-hmm. we went to work and listened to the same stories every day and there were no change, we would be more depressed than our clients.
Yeah.
We'd be taking on, I work 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. That's like 12 hours of taking on stuff. But when you see 12 hours of change, some people faster, some people slower, obviously, you feel like you did something for the world that was absolutely yeah. amazing that day. And it's not just those people though. This is the thing, like when you help those people and then they create change and shift the family dynamic and start mm-hmm. sharing your work, even without you being there with other people, it's like, who knows how many people you and I have actually assisted as a byproduct yeah. of that.
Oh, and a lot of times we don't know, or we'll have like those moments where again, clients come to you and be like, hey, you helped me out so much. See, I don't know, like when it comes to referrals too, like I never had an ego where it's just like, this is my client, he or she's with me, I'm not gonna give them up to anyone else. Like if I can't help them, I find joy in referring them to someone who can help them.
Well, that's what I like about the 5-step sales process. The first step is greet and introduce and you build rapport. Then the second next step, you ask for what their specific needs are. So instead of sitting there and going, whenever people say to me, oh, what do you do? I said, I do 101 things. I'm an inspirational speaker, a consultant, mm-hmm. a researcher, a writer, content creator, a teacher. Why would I bother you with 99 if maybe only 2% is relevant to you? It would be wiser for me to listen and ask you a set of quality questions. What are your biggest challenges? What are your specific goals and outcomes? And what time frame do you want to achieve them in? And then I just let them talk. So that's the second part of it. The third step is to actually realize whether what you do and they're asking for align and need, and if they don't, refer them to somebody else. So I 100% agree with you. Somebody said, I just want to do talking therapy. I'd say, I'm not your guy. I couldn't deal with that for more than two sessions. I've got to help you produce a result. Otherwise, I'd be antsy. So maybe I could refer you to someone else.
What would you do if someone like throughout like 3 or 4 really bad traumatic events and a bunch of other goals they want to work through, but they're like, you know, I want all this, this, and this done in 1 month.
Achievable. They would have to work very, very hard though.
Okay. Yeah.
Because one of the things I say to my clients is I usually break up your consultations and they can do, because there's a few different ways they can work with me. One is an intensive, a half a day or full day breakthrough. It's a full immersion experience. Whatever you're working on, it'll be done by that day. When I met my fiance, I only used to run that structure, but I broke it up because I realized that if I had them for a longer period of time, I could get clients to do homework themselves and empower yeah. themselves in between the sessions. And I like the idea of that. But I do have clients sometimes that either fly me interstate into a hotel and just do a half a day or full day breakthrough, or they fly and I go to their hotel and that's just what we do for that whole day. When I met my fiance, I was in Melbourne, Australia. It's like the bottom right. Mm-hmm. And she was in Sydney, which is about 3 hours following the coastline, about 2 hours by plane, actually 1.5, 2 hours up there. So we used to go back and forth and in the first 6 months. And after a month of being together, she said, what do you do? She goes, you're not a psychiatrist, you're not a psychologist, you're not any of those, but you just, you're kind of a little bit of a gray area. And I said, well, I can't tell you, I have to show you. Mm-hmm. And she goes, okay. And she goes, how? And I said, well, I have to set the parameters because you're someone that I'm seeing at the moment. So it wasn't officially dating, we were seeing. And I go, so in order for you to actually value this service, because I don't do this for fun, I do this because I love it. I mean, it is fun, but I do this as a career. It's not just a thing I piss stuff around with. I said, so you need to book your ticket, not me, because you need to have an investment into this. Secondly, when we get into the process, I'm going to play a little half-half. Part of me is going to be the partner, the guy that you're with, and the other part of me is going to be this consultant that you've never met before. And that's because I have to produce a result for you. That's why you're there. But if you're willing to take that flight, you're willing to come in and embrace it, that's the role I'm going to play, and play 100%. I said, you won't pay anything, and we'll do a half a day breakthrough. So she came in and she said, yep, I'm doing that. Booked it in for that weekend. Now, the first thing, like I said, we bring up a hierarchy of the highest challenges that are occupying time and space in her mind. Throughout her home, my fiance doesn't mind me talking about this, by the way. She's about to join the business and start consulting. And first one was her father. So we utilized the DeMartini grief process. So it was only three or four little things that needed to be done. Half an hour, done. She just looked at me and she goes, I can't feel any of the grief that I walked in here with. What the hell is this? I go, try and find it. She goes, I'm looking for it. I've had it for X amount of years. I cannot find it inside of me. The only thing that comes up is love and gratitude for his life and his death. She goes, this is weird. It's like I've lost it. I said, you haven't lost it. You balanced it. So then with the next two items she had was two ex-boyfriends, because we're there for 6 hours. And that was just, you know, the first part of it was 45 minutes. And then that part was like half an hour. So we've got plenty of time left. Now, I love the fact that it was her ex-partner, because every time you work on an ex-partner, you dissolve any baggage or anchors or triggers that they did that you can now put onto the next partner. So if I set a tone or said something in a tone that a previous partner had, and then things would get abusive or something like that, I wasn't going to get punished for that once I got resolved.
Right.
So when I saw two exes, I went, oh, that's game time for me. Like, I just saw what I'm getting out of this. And now those two, every single charge associated with them, it was amazing. And we even got to see how she became who she is today as well, because the first relationship had a lot of challenges and she didn't express her voice, and she attracted him, which is an over narcissist. She was an over altruist, started to teach her to become more centered. Then the next relationship, she managed 60% of the stuff that she felt she didn't communicate, but not that 40. So guess what? That 40 was what she learned in. Mm-hmm. Then she went too far over in the next relationship where she said, I've got to be the empowered one and I'm going to run the relationship. And she attracted a guy that was so altruistic. He was addicted and obsessed with her and stalked her and everything. And from that, she went, okay, I get it. Too far below, and I'm going to resent him for walking all over me. Too far above, I'm going to resent him for not being on the same level, like I've got a child instead of a partner. Mm-hmm. I need to find someone that's an equal. Then she looked in all of the voids in that past relationship, emotionally managing themselves, financially managing themselves, highly empowered, not possessive of her, and all of those things. Then she meets me. I'm an inspirational speaker, researcher, writer, teacher, and consultant that specializes in emotions. Mm-hmm. That fills that void. She's in Sydney, I'm in Melbourne. And we're dating, and she said, oh, so what are you like with, you know, girl-guy interaction? I said, if you look outside, there are males and females. You can hang out with any of them that you want. If I get weird about that, get rid of me, because that obsession wouldn't be something I'd recommend having in your life. There are people that have been in your life, whether they've got a vagina or a penis, that are there, have been there and served you longer than I have. They've earned their spots. I can't kick them out, and I should never kick them out. Unless they're completely doing your head in which I will bring it into your awareness, why are you still hanging around this person as a challenge for you to empower yourself? But when she saw that, she went, this is all those relationships that created that void, created the value for me. And I'd done the same with her. And then that's when we realized, oh, this is really interesting. So in her doing that, she went, I see what you do now, but you could never have explained that to me, because you must break through and experience it to understand it. So,
So again, going back to, again, when you began your relationship with her, was there any difficult parts? Because again, like you said, you're kind of seeing each other, but you're treating her like a client, but you're kind of dating a little bit, right?
Well, only in that moment, once we've done that breakthrough, and even then at that breakthrough, every time she broke through an area, she jumped and hugged me and kissed me and said, thank you. Yeah. So I said, you can treat me like a partner, but that you'll know which parts intuitively I'm being your consultant. And mm-hmm. that was when I'd say, come on, let's keep going. You can break through this. What are the benefits of it? And I was guiding her. That was her consultant. But once she had broken through something, and I'd say, how'd you go, babe? She'd just jump on me and hug me. She goes, I feel so good. I feel enlightened. This is amazing. She used to hold a lot of attention in her shoulders.
Okay.
And she went and got a massage 2 weeks after that because she goes, my shoulders feel so light. And I explained to her that ionization means that there's a part of the atom that's imbalanced. And that's why we hold tension, tense mm-hmm. ions, and compressed ions in the body's energy in form. So therefore we hold that through the body as well. And she went and got a massage and she goes, I asked him about my shoulders because usually they tell her about her shoulders and how they're tense they are. And the guy was like, best shoulders I've had all week. And I don't understand mm-hmm. why you think that that's usually the case. She goes, I felt it, but it was interesting to physiologically hear somebody that specializes in that say that, no, they're actually all good within that. So after that, she went back to Sydney and she goes, I don't want to trouble you because I understand, you know, you took time out of your day to do that for me. But I don't want to come to you every time I've got a challenge. Is there a way that you can show me what to read or do so mm-hmm. I can figure out how to do that? Because you just took, in some areas, 8 years worth of baggage and in 3 or 4 hours had that completely resolved. If I had that tool and you're growing really rapidly and using it, I would want to be at the same level as you. Otherwise, we're going to have some challenges in terms of our evolution. So I said, no problems at all. So I took her through my level 2 program, which is 9 weeks of teaching it. And I said, I'm going to take you through that every single week. We talk every day on the phone, but we put one day aside where I actually taught her the principles. And then she went and did it for homework. So if you have any questions, just touch base. That's not an issue. And after those 9 weeks, she's been one of my best students. That's why she's becoming a consultant. And she's going to be mm-hmm. doing what I'm doing as well. Because as the minute that she did it, she just went, wow. And she used it and she continued to use it. And her results within work and everything else just kept going up. So it's kind of the middle ground between her and I in the relationship.
Yeah.
Because the method gets you to see both perspectives and find the balance. So what her and I joke around and say is, there's her perspective, my perspective, and then the method. And whenever I'm charged at her, let's say I'm annoyed at her for raising her tone at me or not listening to me, the method will actually get me to get specific in column 8. What did she demonstrate and display? And then what were the benefits to me? As I'm writing the benefits, I actually realize why she did it. And there's never a point where she just does things for the sake of it. There's me challenging her unconsciously and not realizing that I'm doing it. And then her setting a boundary. And then I realize a boundary that I may not even have been aware of even 8 years later into the relationship that was there. And the importance of understanding that and the significance of that moment in now helping us evolve. And the only way to evolve is to understand that moment, understand the challenge, and really understand her perspective and mine, and then see how it's serving me and break through.
And I love, again, how you mentioned, like, you're not playing the victim in that scenario. You're looking at both sides. Where, again, going back to my embarrassment example, it's like, okay, what was your role? What was their role? And where can you learn to, like, grow from that experience? And, again, that's her setting boundaries with you.
Yeah. And the one thing I said to her at the start was, there's three types of relationship dynamics: over altruistic, over narcissistic, and balance. The only one that has an opportunity for longevity is the one that has equilibrium. Because if you go out, if you and I are mates, and every time we go out for a coffee, you don't even pull out your wallet, and you know, you just expect me to pay, I'm going to feel like, hold on a second, I'm sick and tired of babysitting this guy. He's just expecting it now. It's not an equal exchange. So eventually, I'm going to want to get rid of you because I feel that this isn't an equal exchange. If it's the other way around and I'm ringing you every day with a specific challenge and that starts to become every couple of minutes or hours, and you go, I can't do this. I've been over altruistic, giving you too much of my time. And in each one of those spectrums, resentment is built within human physiology and psychology as a feedback to bring equilibrium back into those relationships. So you can't escape that. I feel bad for being resentful. No, it's the way the body and mind's meant to work. It's doing it to try and come back to equilibrium. All things strive towards equilibrium. It's quantum entanglement. So, but if we have a balance where if we're going to coffee or something and I don't pull out my wallet, come on, mate, you do this all the time. You got a job, hook us up. And I go, oh, you know what? You're right. you're right, you got the last couple of times and you hold accountability. We have respect. That's the only dynamic where you have respect. And when you have respect and you feel like an equal, and this person doesn't just support you, but they challenge you to maximize your growth. That was some of my best friends that are girls in the past. And you used to still got a few best friends that are girls. Some relationships have dwindled. But what I loved about them was every now and then they just go, what are you doing with this girl? You're playing with your lunch. Be a man, do this, do that. And I love that because it held me accountable. When you see both of those sides, you have a chance for longevity. So I've told Renee, my partner, I don't ever want you to back down on an argument when I am being over narcissistic in that moment, because I need you as my centeredness to bring me back into equilibrium and not make that a pattern that I regularly do, but awaken me into where we can be equals again. And I said, I'll do the same to you, but don't ever feel bad about that. We'll get to that point. It might get pretty heated, but we'll get to that point. But if we don't, I'm going to find that acceptable, that behavior acceptable unconsciously, most likely. And next thing I know, I'm going to continue to do that because we know we can walk all over. And I said, I'm not looking for someone I can walk all over. I'm looking for an equal in that. So, yeah.
Well, and I mentioned this before too in previous podcasts, it's all about like loving and having respect for yourself. Where if we go back to the example of the coffee thing, if you truly did respect yourself, and that's what, again, friendship is about, is respect. If I'm doing something to hurt, that hurts you or makes you feel uncomfortable, I want you to say something. So you saying, hey, dude, you know, I bought the last three coffees, you know, can you get this one? Well, that's showing love for yourself and our relationship.
Yeah. And people don't want to have those conversations because they perceive that having that conversation is going to cause more, and they put the other person on the pedestal, more pain than pleasure, drawbacks and benefits, disservice and service to the other person. But they're willing to screw themselves over in the process.
Yes.
So I always say, I will always screw over other people before myself because I got to live myself 24 hours a day.
That's so true.
I do a checkup from the neck up. Here's the thing about my relationships. I'll always say that I will rarely end a relationship. It's the feedback of what's occurring with the other person that I'll end up, if I have to end it, it'll be based on that. So what I mean by that is, if I used to 17, 26, I did a lot of partyings and drugs and alcohol and everything else. And then hit 26, I really got inspired to go out and serve people. So I transitioned from nightclubs and drinking every weekend to now having this desire to work 7 days a week. I had an office that was 5 minutes. It was a 15-minute walk, but a 5-minute drive down the road. So I just drive because it was easier to get there, and then I could put all my gym stuff. And I'd get in the office at 6, do a workout, be done by 6:45, shower there, 7 a.m., first one in the office. I would leave that office anywhere between 12 to 2 a.m. in the morning. And I was just researching, writing, teaching. I'd never been given a space where nobody else was there, where there was no boundaries, where I could just research and read all day and just be on the phone with clients internationally and in person all around the world. So I just, that's what I did ever since I was a kid. I've just done what I loved, and now I could do it in this field. As I did that, certain friends started to say, well, you think you're better than us. You don't come out and drink and this and that. And I said, no, that's your perception of it. You go, what do you mean? And I said, my values have changed to what yours are. And you're judging me based on a Windows 95 version. We've got Windows 98 now. That I don't think I'm better than you because I loved all the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Good times. But it's no longer fulfilling. So if I do what you want, then I feel that you owe me. So I'm going to get you to come to a full day workshop and then you're going to hate that. Now we're just both hating where we're at. So I said, instead of me subordinating to you and then resenting you and feeling that you owe me or you doing the same thing, we could find a mutual new set of values and a different way of hanging out. So remember for that particular friend, I said, you love drinking and you love food and you love social environments. I don't drink, stopped drinking 11 years ago. I just can't be bothered. I like to wake up with a lot of energy now because I play golf in the mornings and things. I said, I don't drink, but I do enjoy great food and phenomenal restaurants. So I can meet you after work on a Friday because I'm not drinking. I can pick you up. You're around the corner. And I had a beautiful Mercedes SLK hardtop convertible two-seater. So it was it was nice too. So I picked him up, brought him over. We had he had drinks all night and pissed himself laughing. We had phenomenal conversation. And I said, at the end of it, I said, because I used to work in the nightclub industry, the places that he wanted to go to, he'd line up for hours. I'd just ring the owners and walk straight in. I said, you tell me where you want to go. I'll drop you off because it was only like a 10-minute radius from my property.
Yeah.
I said, I'll drop you off there. I'll walk you in. You look like a rock star coming out of my car and then just having the ropes open for you. I'll shake hands with the owner and then I'm out of there. I'm not even having a drink or anything with you guys. I'm just walking out. I said, but you'll get all of your values fulfilled. I'll get mine fulfilled. And you can see that none of this makes anybody better than anyone else. And he said, oh, I get it. Because you changed. And I was comparing you to the older model instead of loving and appreciating you for who you are. And I said to him, you're going to change at some point in the future. You may have kids or something like that.
Yeah.
And you may change. And it's up to me to either change with you or alter my perceptions and find new ways for us to do that. Or sometimes you just let the relationship go. That's fine. Sometimes they come back. Sometimes they go. But if you're really going to evolve, you have to let go of a lot of people in order to evolve. Otherwise, they end up holding you back from evolving because you can't be the old you and the new you at the same time. You got to commit to one.
Too much conflict.
Too much conflict, yeah. I can't even, like, for me, a late night now is 11 o'clock because I'm ready at 6 to, go even earlier if I'm doing a tea time at 6 o'clock. I'm ready to go get those greens. Whereas the previous me that mate was, at 6 o'clock, I'd be starting my first recovery nightclub. So just a different lifestyle.
Well, and I just love the point where you value the relationship so much where you're willing to put in the work. So you, or both of you. So again, to maintain the relationship, or the new relationship, because sometimes relationships do need to change to last.
Well, it's evolution. We can't escape evolution. Every now and then I was watching some stuff on YouTube recently. It was about America and it was to do with AI. And Amazon and things, and the robots are replacing staff members. And there was a lot of people that were whinging and complaining about being replaced. And I looked at that and I said, I understand that you want to defend your roles, but you've got to understand one thing. Evolution is a constant that's occurring every single day. And you either learn to evolve or you will be left in the past. And that has always been the case. That's why industries, any business that doesn't learn how to maintain and keep its footprint at what's happening in that industry and transition with it, gets replaced by a newcomer that understands the needs of the people more. So if we set this unrealistic expectation, everyone's going to be the same. They're not. That's a delusion. We're all going to change and evolve. Our values will over time. That's perfectly fine because our values derive from our voids and new voids occur. My business was my number one value for 8 years out of the last 11. The last three, my highest value has become creation of children with my partner, and then my business has stepped back. Still very high. I work 12 hours a day and love what I do, but it's because I'm trying to have a child and that thing's just not working out and going through IVF process and things like that. Mm-hmm. So even my values have changed based on a void, what I perceive to be missing. And then once we have a child, I'll probably go back to business again because I feel that I can spend time with the child, but it's not a void to create it. So I'm just being authentic to what my values are. And then once I know what they are, living my life congruently with that, because whatever's highest in your values is where you're organized, disciplined, reliable, and focused. 5 hours feels like 5 minutes. You're disciplined without being asking. Your body neurologically accesses information in your highest values like it's a game show. Somebody asks you about something that's highest in your value, you can't wait to quickly answer. Whereas anything that's lower in your values, you procrastinate, hesitate, frustrate. 5 minutes feels like 5 hours. These are clear feedbacks from human physiology and psychology that the only thing that you're designed to do in your life is to do what you love and love what you do. And that's it. When you do that, you awaken genius, you maximize potential, you just do so many amazing things with human physiology in the world.
Well, going back to the values, that's one thing my clients at the treatment center struggle the most, where let's say they do 3 to 5 months of treatment, they graduate, they're substance free. And I don't tell them, hey, you can't hang out with your old using buddies, but I ask them, do you feel like you can still stay sober? And if you can't, maybe you need to maintain a new relationship with them. And 9 out of 10 times, it's just like, yeah, man, I want to hang out with Billy, but he's always using around me and he doesn't want to change. He's not going to stop using even for like an hour to hang out with me. I'm like, well, then maybe you need to cut ties. I don't know.
Well, I have a really interesting thing when it comes to what people call abuse. I've never met somebody. I've worked with people that are addicted to drugs that when they come in, I said, but I've never met anyone that's addicted to drugs. They go, what do you mean? I said, the perception that drugs are the problem is not the problem. Your inability to manage your emotions is what's the problem. And when you're feeling extreme lows, you search for extreme highs to counteract and balance them. And the drugs represent that. For you, might be drugs. To somebody else, is sex. For somebody else, it's alcohol or being oversupported or porn or whatever it is. So I had a lady that came in. This is a good example of this. And she said, I'm addicted to smoking marijuana. I'd like to stop. I said, you're not addicted. It's your coping strategy. She goes, what do you mean? I said, would you go to work stoned? She goes, never. I wouldn't do it. I'm in a corporate area. Can't be that addicted if you can't even stay addicted at work. And she started laughing. And I said, so when you finish work, what happens next? I go home. Do you live with housemates or by yourself? By myself. What do? I smoke a joint straight away. Okay, excellent. Go to the moment where you walk into the house and the exact moment where you feel the desire to smoke a joint. She goes, yes, I'm there. What specific emotional thing occurred for you to desire? She goes, oh, and when I'm at work, I suppress all of my emotions and the stuff I've been holding onto for years. The minute I get into the door, all of that comes up and I can't escape it now. So I smoke a joint and I go, can you see that this is your strategy? She goes, yeah, actually I can. And I said, why is that the strategy? I said, what have you tried prior to that? I tried this, I tried that, I tried that. Did they work? To be honest, no, they didn't. But that joint, if anybody knows about smoking weed, it hits you faster, I think, than any other drug. It's like a meter. You smoke it and then boom, whereas coke may take 15 minutes. Pill MDMA will take about half an hour. I may have some expertise in these, but each one of these has a different time frame. But with weed, it's immediate gratification within that. So we found the root causes of what was happening. It was actually around her father. And we balanced that out. Then we balanced some self-worth stuff around relationships, you know. But her father, the main crux of that was done in 3 weeks. I get a message from her and it says, I haven't smoked a joint today. I said, cool. Because you already knew that, didn't you? I said, I knew it was coming. I've been doing this for a little bit of time. At that point, it was about 7 or 8 years. And she goes, can I call you? I said, of course you can. I was free at the time. And she goes, I got home yesterday. And instead of having that that instant thought, I just went, put my stuff down, ran a nice bath, relaxed, read a book. It wasn't about 4 or 5 hours later. I went, hold on a second. I haven't smoked a joint. And she goes, it's like, I don't know how many years it was. It had never been the case. She goes, do I want to? And then I went, okay, interesting. Because I always say, I don't have any problem with anyone taking drugs. I have an issue with having them taking it as escapism. Because you can see in America right now, weed is legal. Wasn't legal before. If a person finishes a hard day's worth of work and they've got their mindset in the correct place, and instead of drinking a beer, they decide a small joint or some kind of hemp product is what they want, and they're just using that as a relaxation, I'm fine with that. But if your whole marriage is falling apart and you're using it every 2 seconds to try and overcome it, we've gone from use to abuse, very different thing. But she said, I didn't feel the desire to do it. And she said, I want to wake up fresh tomorrow. I don't want to wake up feeling a little bit edgy because I've had a couple of glasses of red wine in this. And so she did that. And then she said, this is different. Let me try for day two. And when she ran me, she goes, I just want to say thank you. She goes, you never even touched the subject of the weed. And this is the most important part of why I'm leading to this. I said, your extreme emotions are counteracted and balanced by extreme lows by the desire for extreme highs. If it's just a little imbalance, it's uncomfortable. A little bit more, it becomes highly emotional. And when it comes extreme, you look for something that compensates the extremism. And that's when alcohol and all of that can really become an opportunity to escape. But if you get to the next point, it becomes, what I've seen, suicidal. Yeah. Because people think that suicide is the problem. It's not. It's also a strategy. When a person gets to a point where what's occupying time and space in their mind and their body is 24 hours and it's been there for so long and they no longer feel that they can escape it, that's always down here, they look for an opposite of that. Now, what's the opposite? 24 hours a day of pain? Oh, I'm going to commit suicide. 24 hours a day of pleasure because they don't have that pain anymore. Extreme low to the greatest degree, extreme high. I no longer have the pain. So it's actually a strategy to overcome that with counteracting in their perception about the opposite when it's not within that. So when she actually balanced that and she no longer had to have that reaction, she said, I need to have these tools. And I said, you do, because it's not the stopping of you taking it or the minimization. That's nothing. That's child's play. It's when you have your next challenge in the future. And that's a problem with what happens with a lot of what people are focusing on when they come to, I'm going to get rid of your addiction and everything. And then they say, I haven't had anything for 6 weeks. They go, what happens if your mom passes? I don't know if I could manage that. So then you're only one emotional challenge away from getting back on whatever substance it is. This is, you're living in a fairyland right now. We have to equip you with the tools for the next major challenges that you experience and then have you use those tools to manage your perceptions or emotions. That's what I've noticed in 11 years of consulting around addiction.
Absolutely. That's awesome stuff, man. It is. Now, this is the part of the podcast where I ask you, what are your future goals with your company and what do you hope to accomplish down the road?
So we're currently in a very interesting period and phase because I've had staff in the past when I was in Melbourne, but once I moved to Sydney where my partner is, I kind of just did a solo ship here. Did have my accounts team managing all the account stuff, but with my fiance and I had a look at our vision for the next 5 to 10 years as we have children. And one of the things that we realized was that we want to be able to spend 3 months in Bali. Well, to be honest, we want to escape all the cold weather here for 3 months and then just go to Bali. I was designed to be in hot weather. I came from a little island called Rodrigues and I need to stay there. But so we had a look at that and she said that she was inspired to take a step into the business and start consulting because she uses these tools inside out and knows the business inside out. So I told her to figure out what she's inspired to do in the business and take whatever role she wants from that, that inspires her. Yeah. She's going to work from her inspiration. But I'm going to step back. So instead of consulting from 9 till 7:30 at night, I'm going to reduce my consulting hours by half and turn into Steve Jobs, just working on the vision of the company. There's so many. So we've started hiring. We've got 5 new staff members in the last 2 months that are doing all the operational stuff. And it's amazing because now on Wednesdays, this is Wednesday here in Australia, I just film and do video content for, you know, a good 10 hours straight. And then I just dump it onto a hard drive and I have my team take care of it and organize it. So I don't do any of that anymore. Even all the small managerial stuff, my assistant takes care of. So it's really stepping back because in order to leave a footprint in this industry, I've got to start designing very specific tools, workshops, and programs that start to go international, that I start to teach people, especially the ones that don't just want to help themselves, but actually are inspired to do the roles that you and I do to go and actually do that. In fact, right now I just got a message. I've worked hard to get to this level of gratitude. A client has just sent me a picture. It came up on the iPad of them having tears of gratitude. And it's a thing of my clients and I do. We send each other, certain clients, we send each other pictures when we've reflected on past challenges that we've overcome. And we find another piece of the puzzle that awakens our heart. And we end up having not tears of sadness. Tears of sadness mean that you feel heavy. Tears of gratitude are when you actually feel enlightened and appreciative. But he's just sent me a thingy with him crying, just showing. And this guy's a big bodybuilding guy as well. This is an interesting thing. But just sent me a reminder of a thank you for the work that we do together. So I want that to amplify. But in order to do that, I got to step out of the business and we'll have a center in Sydney, most likely, that we actually have 6 or so. Ultimately, we'd like to get it to 10, but we'll start off with 5 consultants working back to back with people. We want them booked. Wow. And then, I just review everything that everybody's doing and tighten up their processes and their breakthroughs and a lot more teaching. So we have things that we started ever since I started delegating and I didn't have to do so much. Now on Tuesday mornings for my students. So if they sign up to our level 1 and they work for 6 weeks, they've got access for a lifetime to our personalized app. And every single Tuesday between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m., we have a workshop. And in that workshop, I work too. And everybody just jumps on. It's like a virtual classroom all around the world. And everybody just works on something that they're working on in that moment. So there's students from 6 years ago that just jump in and they say, hey, I'm in this new relationship. I can see I'm starting to create some imbalanced perceptions towards my partner based on some arguments in the last 6 months. I'm going to start working on some of those specific traits, actions, or inactions and find love and gratitude and appreciation for my partner and see how that's serving me. So we literally, everybody rocks up. We say hi. For 50 minutes, everybody just works. You're in the room. Nobody talks unless someone's got a question, including me. I have to emphasize through excellence to do it myself. At the end of that, we spend 10 minutes and everybody just goes around. And in a short minute, we explain what we worked on and what we got out of that 1 hour. And it's profound to see what some people do. But it's 365 hours in a year if everybody dedicates to it and you can do some profound things. So stuff like that, workshops on being very specific on what emotions are, dissolving them, balancing them, mastering all 7 areas of life, just all of that stuff. So yeah, just more growth, more teaching, more education, and doing it on a higher level.
Well, again, Emmanuel, thank you so much for being on my podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I think we probably could have talked for 100 more hours on
no, man, it was good flow.
Yeah, and I have to say it's very refreshing to speak to a therapist that also understands the desire to put our clients' results at the forefront of the work that we do. And if we feel that we're unequipped to do that, to taking accountability in ourselves to say that we owe our clients so much more than that. This industry needs more people like you that are
Thank you.
asking those questions. And here's the interesting thing. It's a simple question and it's centered around the clients. I don't understand why more of us aren't asking it. So thank you for allowing me to come into a space that is the forefront of what you're doing.
Well, of course, man. And also, if my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there like a website and email they could use to, again, make contact with you?
Yeah, they most certainly can. So the best way is always through a discovery call. Our discovery calls are basically a 20-minute conversation where we can have a look at where are you right now? What are your biggest challenges? What are your outcomes? I call it a virtual coffee because we can sit down and have a coffee regardless of where you are around the world by video or by phone and just have a conversation from at the end of that. Even if we don't end up working together, what you're going to get is a clear understanding of where you are, how you got there, what specifically is occurring, and what the steps are to achieve and guarantee a result out of that as well. So I'll leave you a link and I'll leave that with you so they've got that for a discovery call. Alternatively, you can have a look for me on social media, Emmanuel Anthony. I'm on Instagram. My assistant has got stuff happening on there all the time. I just dump her a whole bunch of stuff and she uploads it. I do a lot of Facebook lives, not as much now, but I still do quite a few on Facebook as well. And on YouTube, we should be starting up a page very, very shortly once we kind of just get all the other social medias where we need them. And www.emmanuelanthony.com.au is the last place you can find me too.
Well, great. And to my listeners, I'll make sure I put all those links on my show notes.
I just want to thank Emmanuel for being an awesome BHI guest. And I just want to thank all my listeners for your support. I just want to again inform everyone that the information and content spoken on this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed mental health professional or a licensed medical doctor. All right, until next time, have a good day. Bye.